JT, live in Vegas.
Sound off like you got a pair. It's hockey, and the Vegas Golden Knights have advanced. They're rolling in the playoffs.
It's a sweep for Vegas.
The Golden Knights are still rolling with momentum in the postseason.
Shot, score!
The San Jose Sharks have been waiting a lot longer than the Vegas Knights to win the Cup.
Backhand on a big stop by Fleury.
With Fleury in goal, you always have a chance to win. Give me a Wild Bill goal, please.
He shoots, he scores! Hat trick, Carlson!
Can you imagine if this team, in their inaugural season, drinks from the cup?
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
Oh, turn it up. We're ready to roll. JT with you all week with a little hockey sprinkled in. Oh, ready to roll. Coming off that game on Saturday. Got some good bitterness. Really good bitterness after that loss in Game 2. Game 3 tonight, a critical spot for your Las Vegas Golden Knights. We're brought to you by Golden Entertainment, the home of PTs, Sierra Gold, SG Bar, Sean Patrick's, the Stratosphere, and all the spots now with all their great drink and food promotions, gaming promotions. Your place to be for this great run for the Vegas Golden Knights. They're all in. I'm all in. We appreciate them kicking off the show every day here. Big show lined up today. One of the great Raider offensive linemen of all time, and that says a lot, Steve Wisniewski, will join us. Wiz, one of the all-time greats, will come in here in about 10 minutes to talk about a couple of a Raider events that'll be here in Vegas with the Raiders Foundation and some other updates from the Raiders and the draft. Former head coach of the New York Giants, coached them to a Super Bowl, Jim Fassel, will join us at about 20 after, and the former wide receiver and now radio host Michael Pritchard, he'll join us at 4:35. So we're loaded up. I'd like to hear from you pregame. To me, if you're not going to put me on here at 4 o'clock, put on an extended pregame for 3 hours and get me out of here. If I'm going to be here for an hour, I want to take hockey calls at 876-1340. I need hockey fans motivated on a critical Game 3 tonight in San Jose against a San Jose team that no doubt about it has the momentum. You could talk about stealing the momentum back, whatever you want to talk about here, but the way that this team came back and won a game that they should have lost gives them the momentum they need to put the Knights in trouble the rest of the way. So that's where we stand. And hockey fans are going crazy in Nashville, in the nation's capital, in Pittsburgh, the Winnipeg Jets. These fans are ready to go, and they're ready to roll in the Bay Area in San Jose. Let me tell you another quick story about that from doing radio for the majority of my career in the Bay Area. The Bay Area looks down to Las Vegas when it comes to sports. Fact, not fiction, because they believe we are a smaller media market, which they are right. But then again, do you think that these rock bands and these superstar entertainers and these fine restaurants are in San Jose or are they in Vegas? Vegas doesn't have to have the biggest TV market to be bigger and better than San Jose. You get that? Because they look down here and say, well, the Raiders are going from a top five media market to the 40th media market. No. The Raiders are coming to the entertainment capital of the world, and it happens to be more exciting and a lot of fun and all that. But when it comes to hockey, these fans believe that they've paid their dues, and they have, and they're back in. I can't believe that with Carlson's second goal, at this point in the series, the Vegas Golden Knights were leading the Sharks 9-0.
And instead, it's a turnover. Here's Carlson, right circle. He shoots. He scores! Forecheck, pressure, speed. Riley Smith helps force a turnover down near the right corner.
I'm sorry, you go up 2-0, you got to win the game. You got to win the game. That's it. You cannot let a team down 2-0, down one game back in the series. At that point in time, the Vegas Golden Knights needed to take the next step in the history of this franchise and annihilate the San Jose Sharks and put them away. You go up 2-0 in that rink at T-Mobile with Fleury in goal, you've got to win the game. Anything else other than a victory will be painstakingly obvious for the rest of this series. I thought the Vegas Golden Knights up 2-0 should have put this away, and now they're in trouble. Now, I don't think they're in deep trouble. I'm here. You know, I'm just telling you that now the momentum is has shifted because of the way that Burns and the power play got going for the Sharks.
So it's a penalty against David Perron, the second minor of the day. And the Sharks get a power play. They win the draw. Burns shoots and scores right from the draw. And the Sharks are on the board just 4 seconds into the power play. Burns.
Yeah, you can't do that. 4 seconds into the power play, Burns, one of the best players in the sport on defense, gets them going. And they got him going in the series. Without Joe Thornton, getting Burns going is a really big deal. And then San Jose kept the momentum and tied it up.
Sharks end up stealing it away. Left side. Feet in front. They score! Tomas Hertl drops it off for Couture. He ties the game 2-2.
All right, so at that time, it's tied at 2-2, and the Knights are in for a game. Now they're in for a game against an experienced team. All these teams have more experience than the Vegas Golden Knights moving forward. We all get that, right? They all have more experience in this type of atmosphere, second round of the postseason, because their players have been together longer with their individual teams. But overall, it started to slip away, and then the Knights tie it up. We get to what happened in overtime when I was jumping up and down thinking that this was the game winner.
And the puck behind the net. Smith shoves it up top. Here's Theodore. He shoots. Knocked down in front. Rebound. Score! Knights win it! Marchessault in front for Vegas. 4-3 Golden Knights. And a 2-0 series lead.
After situation review, it's determined there is goaltender interference prior to the goal. No goal.
So no goal.
No goal there on goaltender interference. I thought it was a bad call. Technically, the letter of the law, there's interference every time that puck's in front of the crease. But this time, I thought once the puck got out of the crease, right before the goal was scored, I thought there was enough distance between the skates colliding and elbows colliding that it shouldn't have been goaltender interference. I thought they got the call wrong. I thought the Vegas Golden Knights were screwed. I thought the Vegas Golden Knights were robbed at home by the referees. Am I right or wrong? 876-1340. The letter of the law, and another big thing, you don't get screwed at home. That's a home call. You get that call. Typically, if it's that close and it was a very difficult call, I didn't think it was night and day, then you give that call to the home team. Then it gave San Jose the ability. At that point, I think most of the people looked around the arena and said, to lose a game, we're going to have to lose it this way. They're going to rip it from us.
Right side, LeBanc feeds back to the left of the shot, and they score. And the Sharks win it in overtime. Power play goal wins it for San Jose.
Devastating. And there it is on the Golden Knights radio network. So that's how they lose. The series is tied up at 1 with the next 2 games starting tonight in San Jose. And I just think that the Knights have to start fast. They have to be fast right out of the gate tonight, and they got to play with the lead. Here's the best case scenario, and there's a worst case scenario. Best case scenario for me is that the Golden Knights get a split up in San Jose. They split these games. They win tonight. They lose the next one. Either way, they got to win. Worst case scenario is they lose both away in San Jose, and then they come back, and it's 3-1. Then it's 3-1, and you're in a really tough spot going forward, and I don't know how you pull it out. Down 3-1 to a team that's been this close over the last 4 or 5 years, it's going to be different than a home game where the Knights in the regular season maybe lost a couple. There's no pressure on them, and they come back and win. The pressure is magnified in the postseason. What are you fans concerned about, and how excited are you for this team to kind of turn it around and get going and win this game tonight? It would really send a message to this entire league if the Knights can bounce back and win this game. If they can come back and win this game, then I think it'll quiet a lot of the critics who are out there. A lot of the critics who are out there will be a little bit tempered. If the Sharks win this game, we're going to be talking about a team that is right back in this series with the momentum. We'll get into that. Steve Wisniewski is one of the great Raider offensive linemen of all time, and that says a lot with all the great players that have played for the organization. The 8-time Pro Bowler, 2-time first-team All-Pro. He was a 2-time All-American in college, and he's a great alumni for the Silver and Black, and we welcome him to Fox Sports Radio. Wiz, thanks for doing this. How you been?
JT, it's always great to talk to you. It's like talking to an old friend. I appreciate all that you've done for the Raider Nation and the Raider family.
Oh, we love you, and we love the fact that you're on with us. We'll get to the big event coming up, Celebrity Swing, on May 9th at Top Golf. The Raiders just went through the draft, and you as a former coach and a former great player understand how important it is for an offensive tackle to go early. The Raiders selected Colton Miller 15th overall after they traded out of the 10th selection to move back to 15. Do you think they got value at that position considering how many Pro Bowlers are already on that offensive line?
Yeah, you know, I think they did, JT. And one of the things I love is they traded back to get productive players in the third and the fifth round. They used a later pick to get a veteran from the Pittsburgh Steelers, a wide receiver. So I think it makes sense. And then also, you know, you never know what you're getting in a draft for 2 years. But I love when you have a pick that you say this kid can be a day one starter at several positions. Maybe he starts at right tackle. He could start down the road at left tackle. So I think absolutely they got value. They got productive players right out the gate.
And it felt like at that point in time, Tom Cable, who former head coach, who you know well, and had a Super Bowl run in Seattle, comes back here now along with Coach Gruden, who you know very well. It seemed like the Raiders were leaning towards defense, but the way the draft moved early, those defensive players were off the board at 15, that this team understands that they have to protect their investment in Derek Carr long term.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom Cable, you mentioned, fantastic coach. Both he was a position coach, head coach. He knows the West Coast system very well. And he's going to get the maximum production out of that offensive line. Now he's got a great young player to build around. And, you know, obviously you would have loved to have a star defensive player, but I think maybe some of the guys they really wanted were off the board early. So it made sense to you know, give up a few positions to get more players.
Steve was
so I'm thrilled at what they've gotten this year's draft and the direction the team's headed.
Steve Wisniewski's our guest. Played with the Los Angeles / Oakland Raiders from 1989 through 2001. He joins us on Fox Sports Radio. Wiz, one other point on this. I look at this offensive line with the Pro Bowlers, and you got Rodney Hudson at center. He just won the Commitment to Excellence Award. Now you look at Gabe Jackson and Kelechi Osemele, Donald Penn, and the issues that he's had when he's healthy. He's one of the better players at that position in the league. And it just looks like this offensive line lost their way last year a bit. And I wanted to ask you your opinion on the difference between zone blocking technique and when you have big guys like that, players the way you played the game, like to just go directly right at the opponent and not go through that zone technique as much. What's the difference between the two schemes and which one did you thrive the most in?
Yeah, you know what? You're bringing up some great points, JT, but the bottom line is offensive linemen like to score touchdowns and they like to win games. And so, honest to God, I don't care if it's a power running game where you're, you know, north and south, or the zone running game where you're a little bit more east to west. I've done both, had great success with both. You like to score touchdowns. And I think that's what John Gruden is all about. And this offensive line is going to play well. To answer your question, though, it's the zone blocking game basically means you line up off the ball a little bit. Each guy is going to block maybe one and a half gaps to his right on a reach to the right or a stretch to the left. You don't exactly have one person in mind that is your guy, but whoever fills that gap, whoever crosses your face, that's who you block. And again, in today's game, basically teams do a little of everything. And I think a good offensive line coach, great coach with Ole, offensive coordinator John Gruden, these guys are going to be successful, and they're going to score some touchdowns. And I think we're all going to be delighted to watch it.
Raider legend Steve Wisniewski joins us. Wiz, one more point on Gruden. If you can tell our audience what it was like and what he was like on game day, but preparation. I was there at times when he would get off the plane and he'd be the first one there. He'd get there, get up at 3 in the morning. He'd be there all day into the night. And these younger players today are a little bit different even from the era that you played in. There's less time available on the field to practice. There's less practices and pads. What can you tell us about the intensity of John Gruden and how prepared he'll be for this upcoming season?
Absolutely, JT. You know, I'm not just saying this just to get fans hyped up. John Gruden, and I've been around great ones, Joe Paterno, Jim Harbaugh I worked for, John Gruden, and all the five head coaches I played under, there's so few people in the world like John Gruden that are that passionate, that have that much charisma. Every single day he made it fun to come to work, and he just competes at everything he does. And that rubs off on everybody in the organization. He had that mindset, we'll play anyone, anywhere. Like, well, let's meet him on the tarmac. And that just, you know, oozes out of his pores. Over and above his charisma and his competitiveness, though, he's one of the brightest offensive minds in football. And I always felt, when he was my head coach, going into a game, no one was better prepared. No one had a better palette of plays to call. And then again, it comes down to execution, right? So it doesn't mean that the coach can be a genius, but you still need players to execute. But I know that our players in the 2018 Oakland Raiders are going to be in a position to succeed. Now it's up to them. You know, a head coach can't control an interception. He can't control a fumble here or there. But our players are going to be in the best possible position to win.
The Raiders Foundation is the charitable arm of the Oakland Raiders, committed to increasing community and civic health through military support and youth development. Big event coming up, Celebrity Swing, Wednesday, May 9th, 6:30 to 9 o'clock at Top Golf in Vegas. That's why we're having you on today. You've been a part of this organization throughout your adult life. You understand their commitment to charity work. This is a great event for those in Vegas who want to know more about the Raider organization and their charity push.
Yes, thanks, JT. I'm thrilled to be there. I hope to see a lot of fans out there May 9th for the Celebrity Swing event benefiting the Veterans Village. But the Raider Foundation is a charitable arm. They've done great things for decades. Mr. Al Davis, the owner, was very charitably oriented and minded. He did so many things, but it was always almost in an anonymous fashion. And, of course, his son, Mark Davis, is the same way. They have a big heart at the Raider organization, big heart for kids, for the military, and this is going to be a great event. We're going to have Hall of Fame players, legends, Raiderettes, a lot of personalities from the Raiders there to mix and mingle and make it a great event. One of our first big events in Las Vegas, so we're thrilled. I'm really looking forward to it.
It sounds like it. Wiz, I hope we do a lot more with you on the Raiders here, not only locally, the national show. Everything you've done for me, you've turned out to be a great friend and a mentor to a lot of Raider fans who look at the character and the poise of this organization, and especially with me on the ground in Vegas already, I think a lot of Raider fans are learning about the history of the team, your part in that history. So to see you around here more and more from time to time is going to be great.
Awesome, JT. And I just got to say, you are first class at everything you do. You treat everybody like a friend and a family member, and it's always a pleasure to see you. You are first class, and you've always been a great friend to us as Raider players and the Raider Nation. So thank you, JT.
Thank Wiz. I'll see you out there. Appreciate you coming on.
Take care.
There's Steve Wisniewski. What a great, great, great player he was. I think because of the teams he played on, he's played on some really good ones. He played at a Hall of Fame level in his career, and he'll be in consideration for a long time. And you want to talk about a character guy. Wow, with his Bible study, when I was around him with the team, and his commitment to being, he was the nastiest dude on the field. Follow me here. Nastiest dude. The other teams would grab his face mask, he'd grab back, and then afterwards, he'd take a shower, he'd pop open his Bible, he'd have a Bible study, and you'd look around and go, look at this guy. He went from 130 miles an hour to 10 miles an hour, signing autographs, shaking hands. Really going to be excited about seeing him out here a bunch more. Let me get Dean up quickly. Dean, thanks for holding. You're on Fox. Go ahead.
No problem. Just take a quick conversation real quick back to the night.
Yep.
I absolutely think they will 100% rebound. You know, as much as we all wanted it, I didn't expect us to sweep this series also. So they will rebound. I expect them to win this series in six. But ultimately, no matter what they do, it's not going to quiet critics down. Because they don't understand this team. They don't understand this town and how we've embraced them. We're going to go all the way. We could go all the way and win the Stanley Cup. And critics will still be saying, yeah, but look at the draft they got. Well, you know what? Who cares? We're going all the way.
Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. And you look at where this team is at this point now. I just don't want to see the Golden Knights lose this series on cheap goals. You can't beat Fleury over seven games unless you get deflections, right? Or you get more power plays because of bad officiating. Or you have goals taken away. We saw that in game two. We saw bad officiating, we saw cheap goals, and we saw a goal taken away. If we just have to deal with that for one game, game two, everybody can live with it. But if we see that in game four, in game six, and the next thing you know, it's a 3-3 game, in overtime, anybody can win. And they will have an advantage because of their personnel and the experience, other than Fleury. And the rest of this team is really good. Tonight, I feel tense tonight, liking this team and wanting to see them do well. Tonight's game is critical because a loss sitting up there in the Bay Area, the size of that media market, everybody's going to be pouring down, and then Vegas is going to be in a must-win situation. I don't think Vegas can win the series unless they split up in San Jose, and I don't want to have to wait till the middle of the week to tell you if that happened. Thanks again to Steve Wisniewski. Fossil Fuel joining us next. The coach, Jim Fossil. Head on out to the SG Bar right at Flamingo in the 215. Once you see it, you won't believe it. Made for sports, gaming, great food, and tremendous drink specials.
With the first pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield, quarterback, Oklahoma.
Baker Mayfield went number one. Joining us as we take a look at the draft, the process, and get ready for NFL season. It's going to be a little bit away. We still got a little bit of a wait. Jim Fossil joins us, NFL Coach of the Year in 1997, former head coach of the Big Blue Wrecking Crew, the Giants, as he brought them to the Super Bowl. Coach, thanks for coming on again. And what was it like in your heyday as a head coach or even as assistant at all your stops, the pressure leading into the draft and then the decompression coming out of it?
Well, that's a good question. I can tell you that right now. You know, I'm glad the way they do it today, spreading out a little bit because, you know, everything moves along so quick and everything that it really is good that they have a little more time.
Yeah, Coach, I think that's right, and I think the league deserves a lot of credit, not only for spreading it out with the Thursday, Friday into the weekend and then moving the venues and having it go from city to city so the fans can be involved. When you're a head coach and even sitting in the war room as an assistant, the ability to make a decision quickly, can you give us a story where you had something set up beautifully on your board but it changed and you got a great player out of it, or possibly you were stressed waiting for a player to drop all the way to you and it didn't work out that way?
You know, no, that is overblown for the public. I can't say that all 32 teams have got a panic or something, but my whole years in the league, you know, we were talking completely. And every time that there was a draft pick and we're moving up for five and another pick, four, we were talking completely that, okay, we know right now, and the only thing that would head it up that would be that if we think that who's going to take this guy or what guy or whatever it is, but, you know, we just sat there and we know who we're going to take. Okay. It wasn't as dramatic as people think.
Mm-hmm. Jim Fossil's our guest. Coach, as a former quarterbacks coach, as an offensive coordinator and a head coach, understanding offense, you must have liked this draft to see those quarterbacks knowing that they were going to go early from Baker Mayfield number one to the Raiders trading out of number 10 so Arizona could get Josh Rosen. Let's start off with Baker Mayfield. He won the Heisman Trophy. He seems to be a bit cocky. He's undersized. Were you on board with that pick? Was he worthy of number one overall?
Yeah, because, you know, I didn't spend a lot of time with guys. I really didn't spend a lot of time. At the end of the day, I liked the guy. When I saw him play, I liked him. I liked him 100%.
Yeah, and then you have those bonus baby quarterbacks, Sam Darnold out of USC, Rosen from UCLA drops to 10, and then we saw Josh Allen, Buffalo traded up. And I wanted to ask you that, Coach, not so much on the technique of the quarterback from Wyoming, but the process when a franchise has failed at the quarterback position. It's been since Jim Kelly where the Bills have had tremendous success. So do you think that's the right time to trade up, give something up on the back end in draft picks to get that quarterback you need in the top 10?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. But, you know, I think, again, the room for drafting, okay, we've done it all. Mm-hmm. And there's only a couple people that are going to make a decision. And I think any time you can get a quarterback, you take them. But there's only three people, actually maybe two, the head coach, the general manager, and the owner. But it's again, like I said, I'm repeating myself, that, you know, it's it's more relaxed than you think, because if you stay there, you know, everybody in the room, coaches, scouts, owner, everybody, as we come down picking, and we already had gone through every scenario that would, what happens if this, what happens if that. So we always did it.
What about your years, and I saw when you were with the Raiders with Al Davis in the war room or other owners along the way in Baltimore with the Mara Tisch family combination with the Giants, the impact that the owner has in that room, even if he's just up against the wall or if he's more of a vocal owner like Al Davis, who has a very strong opinion?
Well, yeah, again, great question. Well, when I was with the Raiders, Al Davis does not trust anybody, especially in the media, that, oh, we're going to pick this guy, we're going to pick that guy. He kept to himself. But in fact, when we stack guys, okay, we stacked them 1 through 10, then 10 through 20. It was on a grease board. And once we were talked about that, now it got erased and nobody knows. There was nothing there. Every other team, I've had it, you know, lined up and all that stuff. But everyone's a little bit different. The Giants, I thought, did the best job. And it came down to George Young, me, and the owners. They didn't put their name in. They just, okay, we've been through this. And the only time the owners got involved, if the guy had issues, personal issues, or he's been arrested or something like that, now they have something to say. Other than that, no. They leave it up to the general manager and the head coach.
Coach, that's a good way to end this conversation in your career as a head coach or as an assistant. When you do draft a troubled player, a kid who was in trouble and made mistakes when he was 17, 18, 19, but now he's a professional, what are those initial meetings like when you get him into the facility? You say, we signed you as an undrafted free agent, or we drafted you. We put our confidence in you, and now you got to step up. I'm sure you've had some memorable moments talking man-to-man with young players in this league.
Oh, big time. When I came down to the Indy workouts, I didn't care as much about the workouts as I did that I want to sit down with that guy and talk to him, look eye to eye, and talk to him with things. Because, you know, as a coach, I've said this many times, you know, people ask me all the time, okay, that like the lacrosse team at Duke, okay, well, they were guilty already for raping a girl, and she said it, and then you fire the coach, kick the kids out, da-da-da-da-da, and then she comes back a couple days later and say, no, I made that up. So you have to be very careful, and you have to really study and study and study. Is this guy got a problem or not? And we had guys, psychologists, always there that said, you know, no, I think this guy's good. He made a mistake somewhere in high school or something, but he's all right.
Nicely said. Coach, it's always a pleasure to talk football. The fans love it. Really appreciate it. Hope we can get you in studio soon. Thanks for the time today.
Anytime. Have to do it.
You got it. Thanks, Coach. Jim Fossil, former Super Bowl coach of the Giants, and I was there for that Super Bowl, and still to this day, it hurt because I thought they were the better team coming in, and they ended up losing. But Coach Fossil had a tremendous year, 1997 NFL Coach of the Year. And his run, I mean, Ravens, Giants, Arizona Cardinals, Raiders, offensive coordinator of the Broncos, and everything that he did at the college level, really respected name out there. You know, the Raiders took some picks that were a little bit risky. I mean, I'm going to go over this. I'm going to spend some time on it this week. You know, the hockey scenario that we're in, everybody, has been great for me, for a guy who's been doing this a long time, because we didn't expect it. Like, this week would have been 4 days NFL draft and a day or two of NBA playoffs and all that. Now, we've made the decision as the flagship station of the Vegas Golden Knights to go right in with hockey and to try to follow this run all the way to the Stanley Cup. We can only do it with the fans who are rabid in the city. We appreciate Coach Fossil. Mike Pritchard will join us coming up here on the other side.
with the 15th pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Oakland Raiders select Colton Miller, offensive tackle, UCLA.
JT, back with you. I was pretty surprised by that pick, and we're excited that Galaxy Outdoor Kitchen is going to give you an opportunity to win and qualify for a $5,000 outdoor kitchen. The grand prize drawing is going to take place at Galaxy Outdoor Kitchen on Saturday, May 12th, at the end of our noon to 2 remote. We're excited about that. You got to be there presented to win. Galaxy Outdoor Kitchens. More about this all week long here on Fox Sports Radio. Mike Pritchard joins us, great friend of the show, the former outstanding wide receiver and now a radio host in Denver. And Michael, good to talk to you again. And what's the vibe like in Denver with the Broncos draft overall?
Excitement, JT. Good to be with you again. You know, this Broncos country has been waiting for this moment. And, you know, free agency has kind of been a dud around here, even though I thought it was substantive with the signing of Case Keenum, kind of stabilizing the franchise. But then they make a splash because Bradley Chubb falls to him in the draft. Cleveland does the unthinkable, and they select a corner. And so John Elway goes up and gets one of the best players in this year's draft. So there's a lot of excitement right now in Denver.
Yeah, I thought it was ridiculous for John Dorsey not to take Chubb. I was mocking it all week, Michael, saying that my son, my 14-year-old son who you knew, could have showed up there in a suit and picked probably Sam Darnold 1 and Bradley Chubb 4 for Cleveland, and they would have got a standing ovation. And with Baker Mayfield, that's interesting to begin with, but to go corner and to let Chubb drop all the way to Denver is incredible. So now, tell me how this works with Von Miller now mentoring this young pass rusher. They'll be on opposite sides there, and the rest of the AFC West are going to be running from these guys.
Yeah, it's going to be a fierce lineup. I mean, they have pass rushers galore. You talk about a Shaq Barrett. You talk about a Shane Ray. Shane Ray, a former first-rounder, too. But now Von Miller has got a bookend. And last time Von had a bookend, it was DeMarcus Ware. Now, nobody's saying that Bradley Chubb is DeMarcus Ware, but he's got a motor on him where he wants to set the edge. He wants to get involved in the running game and never come off the field. So Von Miller is excited. I mean, everybody on defense is excited. The secondary is excited because now they got a presence on the front seven that teams are going to have to deal with. So it was a solid pick by the Denver Broncos. Unexpected. Again, it was the Cleveland Browns. You just don't know what they were going to do, but certainly everybody's happy that Chubb is here.
Mike Pritchard's our guest. Overall, the running back, Royce Freeman, out of Oregon, with C.J. Anderson being gone, is this guy going to get more touches than a typical rookie would get? Talk about the running game for Denver now that we know, and I'll get to the wide receivers that they drafted also, but it felt like they needed that back before they got the receivers, and the receivers feel like they're going to replace the older receivers maybe in a year or two sooner than expected.
Yeah, down the line, you know, Freeman is a guy who's going to compete for the starting job now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. I mean, Devontae Booker, not a disappointment. He's just been banged up and hasn't been consistent. But they wanted a bell cow kind of guy, and that's what Freeman is. He's a big-bodied person. He can run between the tackles well. But then all of a sudden, too, I mean, you're looking at what they do in the National Football. He can catch the ball at the backfield, and he's a guy that can play three downs for you. I believe the Broncos will have a rotation, though, with Devontae Booker, with D'Angelo Henderson, and Nolan Freeman. And they're pretty happy about that. But then also what you mentioned with the wide receivers, you know, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, both approaching 30, both are very expensive for the Broncos to keep. So not only are they drafting guys to look to replace them, but looking for guys to just be more productive than those older receivers. But I think Demaryius Thomas can still play. He's just not going to be the same game breaker that people have been used to. But Sutton's going to be nice. And I tell you what, JT, Deshaun Hamilton, this guy as a rookie has a chance to be very slippery in the slot, in the middle of the field to really help this Broncos offense.
Mike Pritchard, as we wrap it up, I'm just fascinated with this division now because you saw the Vegas win totals came out and it's pretty bunched up. And some people think that the Chargers are the cream of the crop, and the Chargers did really good again on defense. They caught some breaks, and that defense, which I saw up close like you did last year with Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, they got better on defense. Rivers motivated for another playoff push before the end of his career comes down. Kansas City's got Patrick Mahomes. I think there's going to be a steep learning curve with him because he's a player that's going to make plays outside the pocket, and I think that'll bring some turnovers. But back to Denver with Case Keenum. What a year he had. Are most Bronco fans there that you talk to excited about this move or just looking at him as a stopgap for a year or two?
You know, JT, I think most Broncos fans have warmed up to Case Keenum. Before, everybody wanted a Kirk Cousins. They wanted Don Elway to make that kind of a splash and let's just go get a franchise quarterback, that kind of thing. You got to remember, Broncos country is, you know, they're spoiled. I mean, you're looking at Don Elway, you're looking at Peyton Manning in your history in terms of winning championships. So I think this fan base got spoiled. Now the realization of Case Keenum being a quarterback, they warmed up to that because he has been in the NFC Championship game. His story to where he is right now is incredible. They appreciate the work ethic. They appreciate the hard work that way from Case Keenum. So they're warming up to him. Man. But he's the adult in the room. He's really going to be a leader guy on the Broncos squad. I think a lot of players are happy that he's here. They'd rather go the veteran route at this point as opposed to rookie. But stabilizing the franchise and then upgrading the franchise with dominant playmakers like Bradley Chubb and a Sutton and people like that, I mean, that's something that the Broncos needed to do, and certainly Broncos country wanted to see happen.
Mike, let's wrap it up with your draft story. First round pick, 13th overall, Rancho, before you went to Colorado. What did it mean for you on draft day? What were you hearing as smoke screens? Where did you think you were going to go when the Falcons select you there? And the relief for your family and your friends. Walk us through that day and the 24 hours leading up to it and what happened when your name was called.
You know, it's crazy, JT. When you really think about it, I had zero clue that I was going to go in the first round. I mean, I think my agent, which, by the way, we have the same agent. I had the same agent, Baker Mayfield. So Jack Mills is Baker Mayfield's agent. He was my agent. But we had no idea that I was going to go in the first round. Looking at the second round, so I actually woke up probably five picks in the first round. I was still in my underwear when the phone started ringing. It was nuts because you had Detroit that was looking for a receiver. They were calling us. Then you had the Cowboys who was looking at a receiver they drafted, Alvin Harper. And then finally, lo and behold, you know, Pittsburgh also looking for a receiver at that time. Lo and behold, though, here you go, the Falcons at 13. They actually worked me out at UNLV during spring break. So that was a total surprise for me to be selected by the Atlanta Falcons, 13 overall. But I wasn't going to waste that opportunity either. I mean, I know the position and opportunity that was given to me, I was going to make the most of it. So I just got in my playbook. I just wanted to start. I wanted to maximize my time in the National Football League. So very aware of that, very thankful. But I could take you back again to when you dream a little bit. You know, when I was in high school, there was a neighborhood right down the road from Rainbow and Tropicana. It was coming online. It used to be a dump back in the day. And mm-hmm. A friend of mine, actually my high school strength coach, lived in a neighborhood in Spring Valley across the road from here. And I was like, wow, one of these days, I think I'm going to live in that neighborhood. I don't know how I want to do it, but I'm going to live there. And it was Spanish Trail. After I got drafted a few years in the league, I ended up buying a house in Spanish Trail. So full circle right there with me. You know, it started getting drafted, actually going to University of Colorado, winning the national championship. Then getting drafted 13th overall, all of that led to that opportunity to go ahead and purchase a nice home right there in Spanish Trail.
Well, I was with our guys Todd and Joe Horro and the crew out for the Vegas Golden Knights the other night. Michael, I don't know how much longer we can handle this here. Every night, there's a party in Vegas every night, but when this hockey team plays, especially with a 5 o'clock early start, and then everybody comes out of that arena into the park, it's just a party here. Did you ever think from growing up here in Las Vegas that you would see something like this with a hockey team in the desert?
I never thought it, but I was one of the first guys to go out and buy some Vegas Golden Knights gear, and I represent all the way out here in Denver, Colorado. Everybody's like, where'd you get that? Where'd you get that? They want it, JT. They want either a hat, they want a T-shirt, they want something with that logo on it, they want something that says Vegas Golden Knights. So, you know, it is a regional team. I know Mr. Foley wanted that. I think Vegas should be incredibly proud of the fact that it's organic. You know, they didn't take a team that needed to relocate, and no offense to the Raiders at all. I think everybody's happy about that. But the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights are organic, and that's truly our team, I mean, that's very special.
Great to hear from you, especially. A lot of people miss you out here. Hopefully they make a deep run to the Stanley Cup Final, and we can come on out here and catch a game together. Thanks for the draft recap, Michael. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds great, JT. Always good to catch up with
you. Great talking to you. Michael Pritchard. Really good show. Steve Wisniewski, Jim Fossil, Michael Pritchard. 1 hour, and we got a hockey game tonight, which I'm excited about there. When we come back, we'll take a look and preview this game tonight, what you need to do to get your head wrapped around how important this is. Brought to you by PTs. Head to a PTs Gold or go to Sierra Gold at all their other locations here around the valley. The hockey specials are in place. Walk in there, the server, the bar manager, individuals are there to walk you through all the great promotions they have based around the Vegas Golden Knights.
He'll miss the second. Oladipo comes down, hits it three. It's inbound at two. LeBron, and this game is over after a wild, trying, grueling seven games. The Cavaliers finally have punched their ticket to the second round as they knock off the Pacers in game seven by the final of 105-101.
Yeah, that was LeBron in game seven and Cleveland advancing. Here's what we know. Here's what we know about LeBron James as we speak tonight. LeBron is no doubt the second greatest player after this. After this, over the last 3 or 4 years, he'll never be 6-0 in the NBA Finals. That's Jordan. Jordan 6-0, six MVPs in the NBA Finals. That's untouchable. But that was untouchable also for Joe Montana until a guy named Tom Brady came around and kept going back to the Super Bowl, winning. And then Brady surpassed Joe Montana. Which pains me to say, because I'm a huge Montana guy. Never thought that would happen in our lifetime, and it happened. And Brady won the MVP this year and played in the Super Bowl. Brady could come back this year and go back to the Super Bowl. My point is with LeBron is that LeBron is starting to do stuff at an accelerated age that Jordan couldn't do. Correct? Jordan couldn't play at this level, nowhere near this level at this age. So that has to add to the legacy of LeBron. So I don't want to say never, because I think Jordan going 6-0 and being the iconic jump man that he was, I think his legacy as the greatest player of all time is set. But LeBron is catching him every day. Every time LeBron plays in a game seven, plays 40-plus minutes, has 40-plus points, as Michael Jordan's playing golf on a golf course with his new kids, it's another day that LeBron is getting closer to Jordan. I don't think he'll surpass him, but I think what we've seen in the last 2 to 3 seasons, is that LeBron James will be considered, when it's said and done, better than Carmelo. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is a great debate because Jabbar was brilliant. But I think you could say better than Kobe, with Kobe's 5 rings. I don't think LeBron has to win another ring. I think his legacy is going to be a stat guy. He's going to go down as the all-time leading scorer, the all-time leading scorer in the postseason, the all-time leading in rebound and assists for his position, and that's going to be his legacy. And he's played on some garbage teams. This team that he's playing with, oh, it looks like a pickup team that I see down at Lifetime in Summerlin, like 6 guys getting together playing pickup hoops. And LeBron is carrying him on his back. LeBron gave credit and praise to Indiana in that series. Remember, the Pacers played really hard. He had to bring it all in Game 7.
I know that I'm not going to leave a Game 7 as like, I wish I would have did this or I wish I would have did that. I'd be able to leave, you know, the game, sleep comfortably, you know, because I'm going to leave everything on the floor. So that was just my mindset.
Yeah, I knew what would happen today. I tweeted it out last night at JT the Brick. Everyone would wake up today with the same LeBron formula. And I'll be doing it tonight here at the top of the hour. The same formula is that when LeBron plays and does something, we have to lead with it. We have to talk about it because he's the biggest athlete in America right now. He's bigger than any hockey player, bigger than any football player. And thank God for the NBA that he's going to play another 2 weeks. Can you imagine if we had to sit here and break down Indiana-Toronto? Woo! Thanks to Bobby for putting the show together. Our guest, Mike Pritchard, Jim Fossil, And I was excited to talk to Steve Wisniewski, the Raider legend. Al Bernstein, tomorrow. We're loaded up with hockey guests all week long. The game is tonight. And, hey, join me Saturday, this Saturday, at Poncho's, right there in downtown Summerlin, for the first real Raider remote in this town. 2 hours plus a one-hour Q&A with several Raider legends who will be in town from noon to 3, Saturday, Cinco de Mayo. The JT the Brick Show, a rare Saturday show on Cinco de Mayo. The tequila will be flowing. See you out there.